Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. It is time once again for another flabbergasting episode of America's Most Haunted. And we are so excited about the show tonight because we get to do something really fun. We're often very serious with our paranormal encounters and our paranormal investigators and whatnot. And that's what the show's all about. But it's also about fun and the paranormal as it manifests itself in the form of horror and whatnot in film, not just TV, not just the real world, but movies too. And we're very excited because we have two really up-and-coming young, oh boy, these guys are young. Holy cow, they are so young.
Hello.
We have the writer, director, producers, and co-stars of the brand new zombie horror comedy, Dead Before Dawn. Do we have Teresa, the world famous haunted housewife, with us?
Yes, I am here. And Eric, it's not that they're so young, it's just that you're so old.
Yeah, you do that every time you can. Every time you can
every
squeeze that
time
in.
I can. Absolutely.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi, April.
Oh,
how are you?
You emerged without a phone. How can this be? Are you in my room?
I have emerged. I was invisible.
Are you in my room? Are the walls
yes.
talking to me?
Yes. Can't you see me? I'm to the right.
Fantastic. Well, it is time that I introduce you to, since I've said all these wondrous things, and I just finished watching the movie. I'm not exaggerating. Tim called about 5 seconds before showtime. I finished the movie 5 seconds before that. So, we have from Dead Before Dawn, director, producer, co-star, April Mullen, and writer, producer, co-star, Tim Dorn. Excellent
Hello.
To have you here. Thank you so much,
Thanks
guys.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
What a pleasure. It's amazing what work you did. As I hear, I wouldn't believe it to see it, as I hear this was a relatively low budget, quick shoot production, but man, it looks so great. And while I couldn't see it in the 3D, I've heard that you shot it in 3D stereoscope.
We sure did.
And you are the first and youngest, which you know, kind of tautological, but we'll go with it, woman to have done such a thing.
Yeah, it was fantastic. We shot in stereoscopic 3D full, so we had two cameras rolling the whole time. They were red. And we had a quasar rig, which was a massive rig at the time. This was 2 years ago, so it weighed about 100 pounds. It was a 20-day shoot. Like you said, it was a quick, fast and furious 3D, you know, film.
Rather than me just read off of the page here, the description, why don't you guys just give us a little description about the film and let us know where people can find it and all that before we get into the goodies, before we get into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, no problem. Dead Before Dawn is sort of like a self-aware comedy, really, at the end of the day, that follows a bunch of college kids who unwittingly release a curse that causes everybody they make eye contact with to kill themselves and turn into zombie demons, a.k.a. Zemons. So Zemons are a brand new... yeah, and then they have the classic 24 hours to reverse the curse or else everybody's going to be dead before dawn.
Hence the title. Amazing how that works.
Title.
And what a great cast. It was really fun to see. I recognized a lot of people, and obviously, of course, Christopher Lloyd, and who else? Who's the professor? Now my brain
Kevin
is
McDonald
just,
from Kids in the Hall of Fame. Yeah,
Kids in the Hall, of course,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And I recognized the two other guys, you know, your best
yeah.
friend and the other guy. I know I've seen them before. And
yeah, Devin Bostick and... from Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and we have Brandon J. McLaren, who's been in so much stuff, everything from, like, The Killing all the way down to Power Rangers. I think that's where he sort of got his start as the Red Power Ranger back in the day. Yeah, great cast.
Oh, my God!
Martha
McIsaac,
our love interest, is from Superbad, too. Yeah.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, so it's an amazing cast, and it looks so good. The production values are amazing. The color, even though I just saw it on a computer, the color looked really, really great. I mean, it's an amazing production. You guys should really be proud
Thank
of this.
You.
Thank you very much.
And this is your own production company, right? Wango Films is you guys?
Yeah, Wango Films is us. This is we're actually just going into production on our fourth film. So Dead Before Dawn was our third feature. Our first was Rock, Paper, Scissors, The Way of the Tosser, which was a mock doc sort of about a guy obsessed with Rock, Paper, Scissors World Championships. And it was all a Christopher Guest style, sort of. And then we had Gravy Train, which is an homage to a 70s cop revenge, sort of his father's murder, basically. So it was a really fun movie. And then Dead Before Dawn.
And what are you working on now?
Ooh la la. Am I allowed to say? Yes. It's an action thriller. It's entitled 88, and we are literally in Niagara Falls in the hotel rooms, and we go to camera Thursday. So we're very excited.
Holy cats. And you're going to shoot it in Niagara Falls?
We sure are. And surrounding
it. And you're from Niagara Falls.
I am. I was lucky.
Yeah,
I was born here.
Stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's back up. Teresa, anything you would like to interject at this early phase of the game?
Yeah, I wish I could have watched the movie, but I couldn't. So, unfortunately, I didn't get to see it. And since I haven't seen it, like most of our audience, has probably not seen it yet, or many of them have not seen it. I'm reading the description, and I'm just imagining Christopher Lloyd, and I can't get either Jim from Taxi or Dr. Emmett Brown riding around in a Winnebago killing demons. And I don't know, man. The picture I've got going in my head is pretty good, but I can't wait to see the movie to see how it all plays out, because it's just it sounds like such a fun movie, and I can't wait to see it. I wish I could have seen it before the show started. But as a woman, kudos, April. My goodness, you've already done so much. The first and youngest female director to direct a movie, and you star in it as well. You're overachiever.
Tim's going to make fun of me now. But thank you so much. That's so kind of you.
Oh, that's great. I'm all about it. As the haunted housewife, you know, me and my partner were like, you know, girl power, yay. It's tough in a male-dominated industry, and I'm sure that your industry is even harder than, you know, the ghost hunting that I do. So, I mean, it's quite a feat, and I can't wait to see it. I think it's awesome, and I wish you much success. And I can't wait to see the film. Are you a horror film buff? I mean, is this the kind of stuff that you like, or how did this all happen that you decided to make a horror movie?
For us, I mean, we just love film, like, in general. So we go from anything from, like, you know, Ghostbusters to Shaun of the Dead to Young Frankenstein, like, David Lynch. We're, like, just huge fans of everything, any, you know, well-made, fantastic films. But when we were shooting, when we decided to shoot our film in 3D, we then decided to shoot a genre film because we thought it would be best suited for the 3D medium, and we've always done comedy. We're from a comedy background, so we thought, why not mix the two and do a horror comedy? And something we thought was really fun was a bunch of college kids just completely, you know, making fun of a cryptic urn that breaks, and they're like, oh, I wonder if this happened, I wonder if that happened, and they were just making the most ridiculous curse up that they could, and then it actually came true. So the point of, like, Zemans is like, oh, zombies are so overdone, let's make them demons, so then they have minds, and they can, you know, manipulate things and move fast, and you can hickey them and make them your slave. Like, people just, you know, went on a tangent, and then it actually all came true. So the whole film is in good fun, and it's meant to be shared with friends and family in large groups, and just, you know, like a Rocky Horror Picture thing. It's like, you know, you laugh, you scream, you, like, scream at the screen and stuff. It's a really fun film.
That's awesome. Yeah, those are my favorite kind of horror movies. I mean, I like a good scare, but it takes quite a bit to actually frighten me, to really scare me. So, you know, laughing, being scared, getting the emotions like that are all great. And I love a good, funny, smart horror movie. Those are my favorite kind, and this one, I'm like, I'm looking at the trailer now. It's already sold me.
So, it is fun.
Good.
And for those of you who are listening who have not been able to see the movie, or if you've not downloaded it, click on our site and the Dead Before Dawn, and you can get to a trailer and see it. It's obviously not going to be in 3D when you watch it on your computer, but check it out. It's funny.
There's good news. It's at there's an exclusive at Best Buy that there's a 3D Blu-ray there, and then it's sort of everywhere right now. So it's out at Walmart and iTunes and digital. You can find it pretty much anywhere in the U.S. right now.
Awesome. Just in time for Halloween.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And as I say, just kind of across the board, even the packaging is. I mean, it just looks so slick and professional. It really does not have that indie feel. I should say it doesn't have the downside of the indie feel. There are certainly very positive aspects of the indie feel in that you guys were, you know, pretty freewheeling and you took liberties with some of the conventions. And that's what's funny about it. I want to say one thing, just because it struck me as Teresa was talking. Tim, you had said, and it certainly is for the most part, a self-aware horror comedy. I mean, people are, you know, but it isn't only that. And there really are some moments. I think the closest analog just in terms of feel movie-wise probably is Shaun of the Dead, because that has humor, that has, you know, some quite intense horror in it. Yours is a slightly less intense, but there's some wild stuff going on. But there really are some actually tender moments when kind of the ironic is put aside. And it doesn't feel ironic. You know, it feels like, wow, I mean, because there's real relationships here, and they are being sort of constantly transformed and mutating these poor relationships, you know. They're being put through the ringer. And yet there's always a connection. You know, the connections remain, and the characters kind of go with the flow in terms of how they maintain those relationships, but they do. So there really is an underlying element of it also being a relationship, a genuine relationship film, as well as, you know, the more ironic or self-aware, as you said, Tim, you know, horror comedy. So, but I think it really works, and the fact that you have so many recognizable faces and people who are very talented and really worked well together as an ensemble, it's pretty amazing stuff. So where did the initial idea for this specific film, was there like one kernel? Because I know, Tim, you were the writer. It sounds like you guys pretty well collaborate kind of across the board, but Tim's the official writer. Was there just some specific seed that led to this?
This is, yeah, you know, there was a couple factors in deciding this particular thing. But yeah, April and I, we always collaborate and come up with the ideas for our next projects together. So again, it goes back to we were really thinking about, you know, we were coming off two comedies in a row, and we wanted to do something with a bit more edge. And it actually completely grew from the 3D idea, where at the time we were coming up with it, I guess it would have been about, I don't know, 2010 when we first started conceptualizing. 3D was becoming pretty big, and in Canada, where we were at the time, there was a lot of advancements in 3D technology, and there was a lot of big studio pictures shooting in Toronto in 3D, but there was no independent films happening in 3D. And we also realized there's like a lot of these talented 3D people that we started meeting, but no independent films to house the 3D things. We said, you know, April was like, Tim, I think we need to make a 3D independent film. And that is sort of where it started. And I was like, yeah, making a 3D independent film sounds really cool, but I don't know if it's possible. But the seed started from there, and it sort of grew, and then we were like, you know, it would be really awesome to have a sort of new take on the zombie genre and do that in 3D and then pepper it with comedy. And it just sort of all grew from there. And then the Zeman idea is something that we really liked. And we liked this idea of, you know, taking sort of the stereotypes of a horror film, like the classic college kids type of thing, but turning it on its head and having a lot of fun with that. So people can watch it and be like, oh, yeah, you know, it all sort of grew from there.
And at the time, like, vampires were really, really hot because Twilight had just come out. And we were like, let's do zombies. Nobody's done zombies in so long. And then we were like, oh, that's going to be so great. We'll do zombies, but we'll put our fresh spin on it. We'll mix them with the demons. So there's, you know, a brain there still. And we thought it was really innovative, new, and like a revitalization. But then literally right after that, We were shooting, and then The Walking Dead came out, and World War Z was bought, and we were like, oh, God, zombies are hot now. So at the time, we didn't know, and then it just all sort of happened at once. But I think that's what happens. It kind of goes werewolves, you know, vampires, and then zombies. And
then ghosts.
Keep circling. Thank God they do, because they're so much fun. So, I think that's what happens.
Well, you led the zeitgeist, you guys.
I will take that, and I'm going to put that quote on the wall. I led the zeitgeist. I led the zombie zeitgeist.
Absolutely. You may use it free of charge. No issues whatsoever. I am proud to have done my part. Why don't we back up a little bit? Because you guys are so young. What are you, like early 30s, mid-30s?
Yeah.
Early, yeah.
I mean, I'm just guessing.
Based on a timeline that I assembled,
you seem to be about that. And so, I mean, that is very young to be now just getting going about to start shooting your fourth film. You're covering the whole spectrum. Your actors, your producers, writers, directors, and to have done that much so young is amazing. How did all of this get started, and how did you start working together?
We started working together. We went to Ryerson University Theater. We both are from a theater school background, so we were in acting and we were doing theater, and we started doing clown sketches together. And our clowns really got along comedy wise, and we had the same sense of comedy. And then when we graduated, we all parted ways, and I was in LA auditioning like a fiend. And then there was a big writer's strike and a
SAG strike. Yeah.
So then Tim was back in Toronto. And he was like, nothing's happening over here. I'm like, yeah, nothing's happening over here. This is really not cool. We were like, oh no, okay. And we, Tim's always been huge on writing his own, writing his own work. And then so was I. And so we sort of teamed up and we started doing a one-man play first. And then we thought, let's move into film. And so then we just sort of, literally just from the ground up with rock, paper, scissors, learned the ropes on our own, 8 years ago, I guess. Every single aspect of making a film, including delivery, distribution, funding, tax credits, everything you could imagine, we had to just sort of learn by trial and error. Music rights, everything, because on the first film, we had only ourselves. The crew was four people. We didn't have a first AD. We didn't have Slate. We didn't even know, any of that. So we sort of were self-taught in that regard. And just from learning from being on set as an actor and actress throughout the years, we just sort of absorbed like sponges everything we could. And then from there, we just kept working as hard as we could and never looked back, took huge risks, gambled real hard. And that was it, basically.
Wow. Well, that sounds easy.
I think everyone should do it.
Well, I mean, you make it sound simple, but I mean, anyone who has the tiniest notion of what goes into all this knows it's not. I mean, just the funding alone is very complicated.
We were sitting, outside today, and we were just talking about our cast and locking all of our cast for the next one. We were thinking, making a film really is insane. You become crazy because there's so many different elements that you're trying to tie together to make all of these things come together to actually shoot something and then make it work and then edit it and then color correct it and goes through all this process, and you got to make sure it's marketable, and then you have to make sure your artwork matches your film, and then you got to do trailers. It's just like it's a 3-year commitment, and you just have to be beyond passionate about what you do and just always be gunning for some sort of finish line, which there never is a finish line. But anyways, you pretend there is, so you're gunning you're gunning for it. But it's like riding a tornado. So you got to go with the currents and just ride through it and love it. It's exhilarating.
I have to say I really have so much respect at this point for anybody that makes independent film. I think that it's because it is really at the end of the day, it's actually quite a cool experience because there's so much about it that's organic and so much that changes on the fly that you never really know what you're going to get at the end of the day, sort of like Forrest Gump said. But it is really, I have so much respect for filmmakers in general now. Anytime I see a finished film at all, I'm just like, wow.
I just want to say I love you and hug them.
Hey,
it's literally
they
a miracle that any film ever gets finished, I feel. So I'm like,
me too.
Yeah. When you see one, yeah.
Well, you know, Teresa and I, we just turned in the manuscript of our book, which is America's Most Haunted, hence the name of the
show.
There you
go. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I know how much was involved in that. And, of course, we're not done because we've just turned in the manuscript. We now have to go through the back and forth with the publisher and all that. But I was just thinking as you were talking, you know, about describing the process. I mean, we can relate to it, but film just has so many more dimensions, you know. So ours is like playing, you know, tic-tac-toe in 2D on a piece of paper. And you guys are building this, you know, nine-dimensional construct and having to keep it all going and attend to all these issues all at the same time without losing your mind and without losing your sense of humor. Because, I mean, you can see how nutty people get. I mean, you can understand.
Yeah, you just have to laugh. That's true.
A sense of humor is important. You guys probably know that as well. A sense of humor is so important.
When you were saying tic-tac-toe building blocks, all I kept thinking is ours is like a Lego thing of dun-dun-dun-dun, Game of Thrones. You know when they like go soaring all over the land? So I was like, oh, it's like a Lego thing of making a film. Anyway, it's a huge nerd bomber thing that I just said.
No, that's another dimension you have added to the picture.
Yes.
Speaking of dimensions, you guys make it even harder,
I
would
think.
By acting in it, and I'm very interested in that relationship because you're not just kind of appearing in it like, you know, there's a lot of directors, I don't know so much about screenwriters, but there's a number of directors who are also actors to a greater or lesser extent. They appear, you know, they may do minor characters in their own films and then appear in bigger roles maybe in other people's. But, I mean, you guys are literally co-stars. I mean, you are among the stars. You're not, these are not bit parts. You guys are right in there with the group. And so, I mean, you're on screen between the two of you, you know, pretty much the whole movie, one or the other or both of you are on screen. So how does that work with being filmmakers and then also being co-stars of the film?
There's a couple different factors in that. We've talked about this before. I think, number one, I think our background really helps with that. The fact that we learned that way, you know, with our first film, we had to do it all ourselves. And we were in that film as well. I think that really helped. So, like, as we grew each film, that also grew. So I think that was a good thing. And then number two, support is really important. I mean, I think that's something that really April and I are really lucky about having. You know, between the two of us, we have a really great understanding of what the other one is doing at all times, which is great. And we also have a lot of people that we work with that are really know where we're coming from, which is also a good thing. I think that's a really important factor as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third is just, I think you have to really be able to go with the flow a lot of the time. I don't know, April, what do you think?
Yeah, and thank God for digital playback, because then I can, you know, watch the tape back, which before, I mean, that wouldn't have been for directing-wise. You know, if something feels off, usually I can fix it in the moment. I'll sort of reset and retake within the scene. Because I'm in the block, like I'm in the frame, but when I don't know, there's digital playback, which really helps. So that's my friend.
You know, and it is, April has the much harder job because she is, you know, the director of the films. So it's watching April work on set's really interesting, and it's hilarious actually. Sometimes on Dead Before Dawn, we would be right in the middle of a scene, and you know, we're going through the whole action, and then like something might happen, and everything will sort of like stop, and it's like, okay, yeah, just take it back. And she would like literally jump right into director mode, and then back into actor mode. But it's really funny because we have sort of some, you know, behind the scenes footage of like, you know, takes when that happens, and it's really funny to watch because it literally looks almost like two people. You know, it's like this is one person, this is another person. So it's interesting. And
that's
we got
exactly what I was going
to
ask.
I was just
going to say, is it a sort of instantaneous role switching, which you just said it is, or I was trying to picture, could it be kind of like a hybrid thing where you're kind of always in both modes? But no, it's very interesting to hear.
Yeah.
Boy, how do you keep that separate in your mind? I mean, you must have a weird.
I can't even explain it, and sometimes I don't even know how it's going to happen before it starts. And then when it's in the moment of the take, you know, you're acting, so you're concentrating and listening to the actors. But then when you feel something's off, you right away just can say something. So it's like that's when you switch out and go to director mode, and then, you know, you cut the take or you alter things or say speed up, guys. You know, it becomes obvious in the moment because you're in the scene, and somehow you're just not self-aware as an actor. You're just sort of listening to the cast do their thing. It's bizarre. I can't really put a finger on it, but it happens in the moment. There's nothing you can do to prepare for it except really be in the moment.
You know, I think another lucky thing about what we've done so far in the idea that it was like we produce our projects from the ground up is it actually gives you a really good understanding of what you're dealing with at all times. You're so aware of the material. I mean, with Dead Before Dawn, we started right from the very, very first levels together. So you're really aware of what you're doing at all times, and we sort of work really collaboratively in a lot of different ways. So you have such a good sense of the material that it actually, you know, it works together. Because we know, you know, we're the ones that are writing it, and we're also the ones that can look at final picture cuts. So I don't know, it's almost advantageous in a way. It's a great experience. You just get to be really collaborative and creative.
Very, very interesting. I was thinking as you were talking, you know, who else does do that? Clint Eastwood, Woody Allen.
Sometimes Quentin throws in a little, you know, he does a cameo, Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, David
That's
Lynch.
True.
David Lynch
does
did it
some
in
cameos.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
He was all about it.
Right. That's right. He was a senior agent.
Yeah. He played that scene, and he was so great in that.
I love that show. It kind of deteriorated rapidly, which David Lynch seems to be prone to doing. But I mean, those early, I forget how many seasons there were, but I think that first season, it was just magical. I mean, it was so atmospheric.
Man.
It was so atmospheric. That's what he's really great at, although he's told stories too, you know. He has certainly told some really great stories. You just kind of never know what you're getting with him, and that's it's that way with a lot of people who are quote unquote geniuses, you know, that you don't exactly know what you're gonna get. Teresa, hop in, dear.
What is I see all the different hats that you're wearing and everything you're doing, and I can just imagine, you know, 24-hour days and lots of coffee and no sleep and all that good stuff. But what was your first love? I mean, did you come into this as an actor, as a writer, as a comedian? What was the first love for both of you, for Tim and for you, April? What did you first plan on doing with your life before you ended up doing absolutely everything there is to do in the entertainment field? Would you go at it from an actor's point of view or a writer, or did you not even have a goal, just kind of winging it?
You know, for me personally, I've actually looked back, I'm like, wow, it's interesting, because I can't really put a specific label on what it is I'm doing now. I find that I always really enjoyed performing when I was growing up. A lot, and I always really enjoyed writing. Those are the two sides I say I come from the most, and I really enjoyed comedy. So those were three things that were driving forces to me when I was younger. But I look now, because we do a lot more producing, but I actually did, you know, really well, and I did a lot of science and math when I was in high school, and I actually went to university even for a year in, like, sort of a science field before I was like, what the heck am I doing? And I sort of pulled out and reevaluated things, and I realized, you know, where my true passions lied, and I went towards that. But I would say if I was to rank, say, you know, performing, writing, producing in an order, I would go performing first, writing second, and producing probably at the bottom. But, I mean, they all have their definite perks.
Tim's best in front of a live audience. You have to know this. It's his, like, gift on the planet. He needs to be on Saturday Night Live at some point. It's just, he's unstoppable. That's all I can say. So one day you'll see it and you'll say, oh, that's what they were talking about. It hasn't been able to shine yet. But anyways.
Thank you, April.
That was quite a compliment.
Yeah, that was great.
I was going to say, I think people have been asking me this lately, and so I've been, like, answering in different ways, and now I think I have a clear answer. I think that at a young age, I was really amped on imagination. So I think I come from a passion for imagination. So that comes to be, like, acting is imagining you're somewhere else and being someone else, and then directing is imagining a story being told and watching it come together and how you visualize it. So I think at the end of the day, that's what's my driving force, is just imagination in general, and creating a world and characters and playing make-believe and magic and all of that coming together somehow in the end to create something that you can watch and rewind and watch over again.
That's a good answer. I like that.
Yeah, I got to remember that for the books. Uh-oh, somebody, I hope somebody out there is listening real hard.
Oh, we have the episode on demand, so you can play it back later.
There you go.
I lived in L.A. for a while. I was out there for about 5 years, and I was working in post-production. And this was before the digital age. We were still working with one-inch tapes. I even worked on some two-inch tapes.
Wow.
I'm giving away my age here. But I remember the first digitals were just coming in, and we were prototyping the digital recorders for Sony at the time. And this was quite a while back. And such a feat, and the Telescene guys would be working, and it was just bizarre how much work went into a production of a TV show or a commercial or a special or anything, and so I understand that even with the digital and there's convenience to it, it's still very, very difficult. But I met a lot of actors when I was out there, and they were, you know, I've wanted to be an actor since I was a year and a half old, and that's all they want to do, and they don't want to do anything else. So just kind of wondering the background that you're coming from. But I understand the drive and the need to create, and I unfortunately cannot create. I don't, you know, I'm not, and I can't draw. I'm looking for somebody to draw something for me for, like, weeks now. It's very funny, but The fact that you can do all these things and do them well is amazing. And the sense of comedy, I think that people think that's a lot easier than it is to really be able to deliver comedy in an effective way that works, I think, is a talent. And to get other people to see your vision, I think it's a lot harder than people think it is. I really do. I do appreciate a good comedy. But now take... I want to kind of switch gears here from the comedy aspect to the kind of the horror aspect. What do you think, and this is kind of off the wall, but not for us, not for our show. Zombies are big right now. As you said, they went through the cycle with the werewolves and vampires, and now it's zombies and ghosts. But I'm a ghost girl, and I love all the media around the paranormal right now. But do you guys, both of you, believe in ghosts?
Oh,
do you believe in
this
paranormal
is
stuff?
A great thing to talk about.
This is really fun.
I am a full-on believer in the paranormal.
Excellent.
I have to say, Tim sometimes is actually petrified of ghosts.
Yeah, I was ever since... I have to admit something, actually. This is a good, great show to be on because, I was... Ever since I was, like, 3 years old, I've been, like, very aware of that world and very, like... to the point where I was a kid and I was very scared of ghosts and that sort of thing. At this point, I still would say I am sort of a pansy when it comes to it, but I'm a lot more accepting of that world, you know what I mean? I love the paranormal.
Of course, I am too.
Teresa's
the hunter. Teresa's the stud. I kind of came in it from the media side of things. I'm more... you know, the observer. I'm like the Neil Young, you know, where you try on different, you just kind of move from genre to genre. I'm a dilettante if I really want to get down to it. I have found that I have that this field, since I've now been in it for a couple of few years, it really does strike a chord with me. But I'm telling you, we were talking about this actually in some depth. It's come up now in the last few shows where when we finished the book and turned it in a couple weeks ago, we had a whole show just kind of chatting about it, really for the first time. So my issue is, I think just like you, Tim, I feel, and especially when I was younger, quite a bit younger, when I was a child and a teenager and up to about, you know, early adulthood, I felt a very, very strong awareness and connection, you know, to this other world. And I think what happened was I got to a point somewhere in my early 20s, I think, where I just kind of turned it off because I didn't want to have to deal with it anymore because it did frighten me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a lot to think about, you know?
I was going to say, on your adventures when you're out ghost hunting, what is one moment that really stands out to you? You know, is there one of those moments where you're just, you know, what's one of your favorite moments?
Oh, absolutely. I tell you right now that the game changer, as I call it, the one thing that happened that made everything real for me,
yes.
Whereas, you know, the thing that it's like, what, did I see something? Did I imagine it? Did I dream it? Did I think I see it? The thing that I call it my game changer was when I got my hair pulled at the Ohio State Reformatory. And it wasn't, not like a light tug. I mean, my head was yanked back 3 times hard. And to the point where it was so obvious, I thought it was my friend, and I thought she was goofing around, and it pissed me off. And I turned around to, like yell at her, and she was just kind of coming around the stairs about 8 to 10 feet away from me. Because we had been told that women get touched in this area when they're investigating this area or walking through this area, that the spirits like to touch them. And I'm like, yeah, right. But when I felt that, and there was absolutely no doubt, there was not a glimmer of doubt, there was nobody, till the day I die, nobody could ever convince me that it didn't happen, that I imagined it. It was real, and it was a physical force. And that moment right there probably when that was it. That was it for me, because there was no doubt in my mind, and it just, and really, when you come to, I mean, people like the paranormal, and they believe in ghosts, or they say they believe in ghosts, but when you really sit down and accept the fact that there are ghosts and spirits, and what it is, life after death, or the survival of the spirit beyond the life of the body, it does pretty much change your entire world, and your entire outlook. That was the moment that, like, the aha moment, or whatever Oprah calls it these days, I don't know. That was my game changer. I'll never forget that.
Well, it's so physical, of course.
Absolutely. I mean, because I understand the power of the mind, and, you know, you can, and I know the human mind is flawed. That was it. That was it. And after that, I was kind of open to anything.
In Teresa's case, though, it's relatively recent. I mean, that's within the last several years. The things that happened to me were actually kind of compressed in terms of the most tangible experiences. A lot of things, as I say, I just kind of felt this general connection to this other existence much of the time. But in terms of things very tangibly happening, I had 3 or 4 things happened within just a few years when I was a teenager. And so I think it's kind of as a result of those. I mean, it's like, my God, is this going to happen to me, you know, an average of once a year from now on? I don't know if I'm up to that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to be an adult now, live my life and get married and have kids. And, you know, do I want to be assaulted by spirits in my bed? Do I want to be attacked by... By these bizarre floating women in the middle of the street with inexplicable Joker-like rictus smiles on their faces running at my car?
Tim's
no, I don't want that more than once.
Wow, that's intense.
Plus, when I was as we wrote, my one experience that I wrote up for the book, because it's the only thing that happened. At any of the, see, we're covering the 10 most haunted public or semi-public places in the U.S.
Yeah.
And so we're doing 10. So, you know, since I haven't been off investigating these places, there was only one where I had an experience, and that was the Queen Mary. And that was way back in the 80s when I was DJing. And I was running all over Southern California, DJing, you know, all these different kinds of parties. And there was quite a few. The fraternities and sororities at USC and UCLA latched on to the Queen Mary and started, booking formals there. And talk about difficult load-in and load-out. Oh, my God, they made it difficult as possible to get in there. And then these tiny little, you know, nautical elevators, you know, with all my stuff. So that's what happened. I was jammed into this little elevator with all my equipment. And I was literally tapped on the shoulder, on the back, and a voice said, "Tight quarters."
Oh, no.
I said what?
And, tight quarters. You know, in the elevator. Yes, and I whip around, and there's no place to whip around to. I'm backed up against the wall in this tiny little elevator. Smash my head against the wall as I whip around. And of course, there's nothing there but the wall. And you can imagine,
man.
I'm in this
admit,
tiny
God's
little
a ghost
space.
With a really fantastic sense of humor.
It sure was.
Hilarious.
It really was. I mean, that's what I thought about after
like,
I got over it.
Like,
you have
a real sense of humor.
That was so
petrifying.
Funny if it had happened
that
to
is
anyone
funny.
But me.
Tight quarters.
I mean, I can, you know, I can certainly visualize filming it, right? I mean, I can picture.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure that's how your mind works, obviously. You know, you just picture it. But, you know, I was so packed in, and I was kind of sweaty because, you know, I'm rolling this, you borrow basically just a valet cart, right? And all my stuff's piled up, you know, up to the 7 feet high, and I'm rolling all through trying to find my way to the correct elevator, you know, in this huge, massive ship. And I finally get to the right elevator, and I squeeze into this thing and have to reach around, all the way around the cart to push the button to get to the floor. And I'm not, you know, if you listen to the show, you know, Teresa, and hopefully you guys will check out the book when it comes out next year. Teresa is claustrophobic, and she talks about that a fair amount, and that does have an impact on her from time to time. But typically I'm not, just not anymore probably than anyone. But in that environment, at that one time, I felt the walls closing in on me, and I could really feel what it feels like to people who are claustrophobic. It was nuts. So anyway, what about you guys? What experiences have you had?
Well, you know, it's funny when you said that. I didn't have a particular experience or anything at this place, but I worked at this when I first got out of university. Where was I? In university? Anyway, I worked at this bar. It was called the Bedford Academy. It was in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. But the thing was, this place was like in it was an old mansion that was built in, I don't know, it was like late 1800s. It was where one of the really, really, really first like wealthy people of Toronto had this house here. And they turned, anyway, this bar bought it and had like three different floors. It was sort of like a pub. But there was two different rooms in that place. Once on the very top floor, they had this room that they would book out for private parties. And then in the basement was like where the keg room was and everything, and that was just like a crazy thing. But everybody swore it was haunted, and it was so scary there. Like, you just got this sense, like, there was any time I was working a private party and I'd be up on the top floor, you know, everybody would leave at the end of the night, you know, it'd be sort of like midnight, and there'd be like three floors between you and anybody else. And same sort of thing, you'd have to take this stupid little tiny service elevator down to get your stuff down. And you'd be sitting there by yourself, and you just didn't feel right. You know what I mean? You were just like, this is not right. It's like that thing when you run up the stairs. You know, if you're in the basement sometimes when you were a kid and you'd run up the stairs because you swear something's following you? It was like that feeling in there all the time. And same thing at the end of the night, if there's finishing a shift and, you know, everybody's gone, it's like 3 a.m, and you go down in the basement, the keg room, you're just like, I am not alone in this place. Period.
There's a technical term for that, you know, Tim.
What is it?
Creepy.
It is. Give me the creeps.
We had a fun, creepy experience on Dead Before Dawn on the set because we shot. Yeah, at the cemetery that the film was shot at, we actually got to shoot at a real cemetery and dug the grave at the back of a cemetery.
It was
a really old cemetery from this 1700s and 1800s, probably the oldest in the Niagara region. And it was fantastic, full of these big, huge trees, very eerie feeling. And we shot 3 nights there for the climax over the sequence of, you know, the 3 days. And they were short nights because it was summer. But when we arrived there and when we were shooting there, there was actually, I think, all of the spirits were really excited and pumped up that a film was shooting there. Like, there was a really excited, positive energy that everybody felt. And we were all like, oh, it really feels like they're really, like, you know, rooting for us. And it felt like, because we were shooting nights and everybody was delirious and exhausted. And while we were shooting at the cemetery, it felt like we had help in, you know.
That's true, actually.
In the way of, like, really good vibes, positivity. And we shot some really impossible things those nights, and we all said it was because the ghosts were with us and the spirits were with us. And we got to shoot at a cemetery, and no one, you know, everything went really smoothly while we were there. So we think we had some good creepy vibes.
That's
well,
awesome.
It's probably true. That. I mean, it's probably absolutely true.
I think there were some demon ghosts, too. I think there were demon ghosts out there.
They just didn't know what their name was. They didn't know they were Zemans, but now they do.
No, but now they do.
And they're thankful.
Found their place. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That really adds a new element, that the fact that that whole cemetery thing is real. That's a real cemetery. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. It sure is a real cemetery.
Very, very cool. Yeah. Too bad Teresa didn't see it. Well, she will. She will. She will. Wow. Well, that's very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Any thoughts? It sounds like you're, in a sense, you have this energy and this exuberance and still a certain youthfulness, which, you know, hopefully will never go away. But you're kind of genre hopping, in a sense, and I mean it in a good way. Do you think you'll circle back around to, you know, paranormal / horror again?
Oh, yeah,
and if so, what do you think it'll be?
Oh, man.
It's funny you say, because we are hopping, but then we're hopping straight back.
Yeah, we literally are going back to a paranormal film for our next film.
Like, this will be like 2016, but first we got to finish this action thriller. But, yeah, we're hopping back. So we'll be, like, you know, leapfrogging back very soon.
Wow. So what's that one about?
Yeah.
I can't tell yet. It's too early. It would jinx it.
We have to come back on and talk in like 1 year.
Yeah, let us finish this film and then we'll talk.
Because we're actually really excited about it. Maybe offline we can talk about it or something, because we can't spoil the secret yet, but we're really pumped about this one. And it is in the genre.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Wow,
yeah,
well, I must have picked up the vibe.
For you.
Yeah. Pardon?
Fire away.
I ask a couple questions here?
Yeah,
I've been trying to jump in here for a while, and I can't get through. When you filmed this movie, you filmed this in Canada mostly? Was this filmed in Toronto?
It was shot in Niagara Falls and the surrounding areas, so Port Coburn, Chippewa, Welland, St. Catharines, and the Niagara region, basically.
And was it shown in Canadian theaters?
It's coming out October 30th for Halloween.
It is.
We're very excited. In 3D.
In 3D, in the Canadian theaters, and will it be in the United States as well, anywhere?
It did. It did its theatrical run back in September, but now it's available basically everywhere else. But, yeah, we were in theaters in September.
I would love to see it in 3D. What I was trying to say earlier about when you were talking about filming and things that were happening in the cemetery is what I found is that places like theaters are notoriously haunted. And I think that's why we get a lot of stories from actors and actresses that sometimes on stage or when they're in a theater or even on a film set. And I think, I don't know if that has a lot to do with all the energy and the vibe that's going on there, or maybe just the reenactment of something might trigger something. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different theories about it, but I find we get so many stories from people about when they're filming something or when they're performing on a stage or something, that all this type of paranormal activity happens. And I think it's a good sign. I think that it's maybe because people in your industry are so creative that maybe their minds they're more open to it. Even if they don't realize they're open to it, maybe they just are. And so I think the spirits might find this is a good time to make themselves known. That whole thing we were talking about in the cemetery, I think that's such a great story, because a lot of people think that cemeteries aren't haunted. And that was, you know, we grew up thinking cemeteries are scary, ghosts in the cemetery, ghosts in the graveyard, the game we played. And then the new thinking was, why would a ghost hang around in a cemetery? And I think that they do hang out in cemeteries because that's where people go to remember them. That's where they go to be honored. And cemeteries were once more like park-like settings than they are today, where they're just, you know, places where people are buried. So I think it's great. I had some friends that were filming like a sizzle reel for a possible TV show, and they were just shooting some B-roll in a cemetery, and the director who did not, the showrunner did not believe in the paranormal, so this was all kind of very humorous for her to be filming a paranormal sizzle reel for a show. But there was a production assistant, and then there was the head camera guy, the director of photography. And they were doing shots in the graveyard, and the director turned around, and they said she turned pure white because she turned around, and the photographer was standing in front of a grave that had his last name on it, and the production assistant was standing in front of a grave that had his last name on it. They didn't know. They just randomly got out and started shooting, and then she turned around to talk to them, and she realized, oh, my God, that says his name and that says his name. And it freaked her out for the rest of the shoot. And that is a good sign. But I mean, that's just like a coincidence. But just things like that happen all the time. I think you need to be more aware of it when you're shooting your action thriller, when you come back around to your paranormal shows. I think that if you're looking for it, you might find a lot more strange things are happening if you get a minute. I know, April, you're probably too busy doing 9,000.
I feel them and I see them. I think even as busy as that we all are, they're around and they're helping, because I think they're entertained by it and they're excited by the energy and, like, you know, the hustle bustle of it all. So I think they're just hanging out for the fun too.
I think that would be great. I think that if you started asking your cast, and especially the crew, if weird things are happening, I think we'd go and interview people on set,
you know,
and they'd have tons of stories.
Oh, you know what? You know what we're going to do for you? Is while we're shooting our next one, we have the next month that we're going to let them have a contest on set for somebody to come up with the most original. We'll do a little video for you, and then we'll submit it to you.
Oh,
of a haunting
awesome.
On set. Because I bet you there will be several.
There for sure is.
Oh,
I mean,
we're totally going to do it for you guys. It's going to happen.
Awesome.
We have
That's
our production
fantastic.
Meeting tomorrow, our first one, so I'm going to announce it. The gauntlet has been laid.
Oh,
and that
could
be painful.
I think this is going to be good. I like this.
That's a great idea, man. Keep the
it really is.
Juices flowing and keep everybody engaged and involved. How fun.
Fun.
That would be great. I wish I could come up on set and see y'all.
Teresa, it's not that far, you know. You know, we're
in
Cleveland, you guys.
We're in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's not too far.
Not too
that's
bad.
Only like I feel like that's only like a 5-hour drive or something from where we are.
It's
it
not
is.
That far at all. It really isn't.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's living up there.
Toronto's
it's
five.
It's not that far, yet it's worlds away.
Yeah, I know.
True.
I know.
I love Toronto, by the way. And I love Niagara Falls. And all
Niagara Falls is an interesting place.
Mm-hmm. It sure is.
I love it.
But we're
going
to hold it to that. So.
And speaking of energy, I mean, you want to talk about a vibe. When you have that much water flowing.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I mean, that completely apart from the paranormal, just going into, you know, scientifically verifiable. The, you guys probably know about the whole, you know, the theory about negative ions. And
it's in the water.
And it's in the water, and it's released,
it's in the water.
Certainly.
There you go. You were saying, how did we do it all, split brains? No, it's in the water.
The picture is becoming clear to me now.
There we go.
It is true.
Well, maybe we really can take a visit. Maybe you guys can turn over this material, these little vignettes. We can come up there, and we can meet you guys, and you can ceremonially hand them over to us.
That would be fun. I mean, we're going to do it tomorrow, so if you want to come down.
It starts tomorrow.
Yeah, it all starts tomorrow.
Well,
we'll do our end,
soon.
And we'll deliver
but
no matter what.
Let's plan it. Let's
okay.
plan it.
Okay. This will be fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, what a pleasure. Any more, Teresa, questions?
No, I'm just send them away, and we'll post them all over on Twitter and Facebook, and let all our listeners see these things. It'll be fun. I've also posted the trailer on Facebook and everywhere. So people want to get a sneak peek at the show and then go and see it or download it or get it on iTunes. They can see Dead Before Dawn. It looks awesome, and I can't wait to see it. I wish I would have seen it before the show started, but I can't wait to see it.
It's okay. It's like dessert.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. You've had the for me, the show was the dessert. Like I said, I literally finished it. You know, the credits are rolling as Tim called in. It was my timing was exquisite. As usual. Anyway, seriously, what a pleasure. What a pleasure talking to you guys. And couldn't admire your accomplishments and your perspective and your, you know, super nice, I mean, absolute utter lack of attitude that I can hear anyway. I don't know if I've ever talked to a director who had so little attitude. Maybe it appears on set.
I love it.
But I'll tell you. You know,
well, thank
you
so
guys
much
are
for having us. We really appreciate
very
it.
Very pleasant,
yeah,
and
fantastic.
Talented. And, wow, I mean, you already got, you know, your next two films lined up. So, I mean, this is not some sort of, I mean, obviously this is a career, and you are really running with it. And, I mean, I feel inspired. I sure hope our listeners, you know, think about what goes into all this. And this isn't a line of work where there are people being particularly supportive to you either. This is stuff you really do have to do on your own. And I'm sure as you're going, you know, now that you're getting into your fourth film, that things do get a little bit easier. And obviously you gain experience and knowledge, and you can take some shortcuts and whatnot, and people start relying on you and trusting you, you know. But early on, you know, I can just imagine, especially as young as you were back then, you know, the kind of resistance that you must have faced. So, I mean, what a great story this is. And you guys really, I mean, you know, you are role models for people of age.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pressure there.
Yeah. That's so nice. Thanks.
No problem. No, I mean it, really. Sincerely, it's really quite an accomplishment. It's amazing that you've done what you've done and are as personable and open and friendly at the same time. That's a pretty great combination.
I'm going to take that compliment and stick it in my heart. That's great. Thank you so much.
I'm going to tell my parents because that's all them.
Well, good. I'm glad. That makes me happy. Because, you know, I mean, as for the most part, we have so much fun doing the show, and it really is fun to talk to people. And we've talked about this before. You know, some of the shows, a lot of the people who we interview have the various paranormal shows. And, you know, we like some of them better than others. I mean, let's face it, some are better than others. And yet, more often than not, we come away after talking to people more favorably disposed, you know, toward their show, because now we know them and now we've talked to them and we like them personally. But, you know, as I say, it's really, really heartening to, you know, to find people who both are very accomplished, because believe me, I admire accomplishment as much as anyone, and I aspire to accomplishment. I have a lot left I want to accomplish, certainly, in my life. And, you know, tangible things, specific things, objective things, I want to accomplish those. And so here you guys are, on the one hand, doing just that and doing it at a rather remarkable pace. And yet, as I say, you're also very fun to talk to, very, very cheery and energetic, and you clearly really love what you do. So I think that ultimately is what it comes down to. If people do what they love to do, then no matter what the obstacle, you know, they will stick it through and they will make it happen and make the world a better place. So good for you guys.
Thank you so much.
We're excited too to grab your book, and we're, you know, that's fantastic that that's coming out, and we'll be looking out for it, and we'll make sure to spread it out to our Zemans that are following us as well.
Zeman Army.
And your minions.
Yeah.
Don't forget the minions.
Our army's going to be real pumped up.
All right. Well, hey, good luck. Best of luck with this new production.
You will be hearing from us, because we're going to send you at least a few spottings, because the spirits are with us this time. So we'll send you some haunting.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
and we
absolutely
certainly do want to talk to you down the road when you can talk about what the what that return to the paranormal is.
We will be knocking.
Yes, we will let you know. Maybe 1 year or so. We're really excited. We have a lot to talk about.
Fantastic. All right. Well, again, good luck with the production. Hope everything goes absolutely as smoothly as possible. And I'm sure it's going to be fantastic work. And so have fun and do great
Thank
work.
You.
And, man, we are so excited to see what you guys come up with in terms of these little vignettes that you're going to put together.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. You never know.
We'll be in touch very shortly.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Okay,
thank you
guys
so much.
Okay, good night.
All right,
thank you.
Good night. Let's remind everyone one more time. The film is Dead Before Dawn, and it is now. It's out on Blu-ray, and there will be 3D, they told us, in Canada. Sounds like kind of worldwide, other than U.S. It is already shown in theaters in the U.S., but it's available in every other format, Blu-ray, DVD, 3D Blu-ray, and also, of course, on digital demand. The film is Dead Before Dawn. It is a zombie, or in this case, Zeman, horror comedy, and it has very strong elements of both, as well as we were saying earlier, a nice undercurrent of strong human and or human Zeman relationships. So it's the real deal. If you're a comedy fan, if you're a horror fan, if you're a zombie fan, if you're a film fan, you gotta check this thing out. All right, so good night. Hope everyone has a great week. We'll be back as usual next Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. Have a great one, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you so much.